He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
I want to talk measles and vaccines today, and in that regard, we're delighted to have the nation's top gun, Dr. Anthony Fauci, the head of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. We'll be on board 10:30 this morning to separate the facts from the old wives' tales. And I also want to talk about the murder of that Jordanian pilot yesterday. ISIS burning him to death, torturing him, distributing the disgusting videotape to the world. The reason I mention it right now is that I have a sense that maybe the ISIS animals may have sowed the seeds of their own destruction with that video. But let's start closer to home. Let's start with that awful Metro North tragedy up in Westchester.
It was so quick. I saw flames, beams. The guy sitting in the five-seater, I started screaming, turned over and looked. He lost his leg, and the guy sitting across in the four-seater had a compound fracture. And then once I fell right in the middle of between those two seats, I saw flames coming at me about a foot from my head.
Apparently, there have been other accidents at this site, which leads me to think that the incident could have been preventable.
All right, that last voice there, Senator Blumenthal of Connecticut, a frequent critic of the Metro North. Rob Astorino knows the score. I tell you, Rob, welcome on board. Great to have you. If you could just stand by, we have reporter Steve Katzenbaum on the scene. Let me go to Steve first. Rob, I'll come right back to you, County Executive. So, Steve, what's the scene right now?
Well, Geraldo, the train is still on the tracks. It never derailed in this accident, so investigators are going over the crash site right now. The charred remains of that first car of the Metro North train, gruesome scene, really. The flames were pretty intense inside. We're told that just about everything in there is charred and melted, and that the folks who lost their lives, sadly, seem to have succumbed to the flames when the third rail pierced through the body of this car. It may have ignited the fire. That's something the investigators are going to be looking into, how this fire actually started. There were reports from witnesses, from people who were in the train, that soon after the collision, when they came to a halt, as they came off, they smelled gasoline. So it's very possible that the gas tank in this SUV might have ruptured and provided the fuel for the flame to ignite.
So, Steve, you're saying they didn't die from the trauma of the impact with the SUV, but rather the fire that resulted?
It's not 100% clear. The autopsies will have to determine that. But what is clear is that some of those bodies were badly burned.
And so how many exactly casualties, car and train?
So the driver of the vehicle passed away. And now they've revised the numbers, five people on board the train. So the woman who was behind the wheel of the SUV passed away, and so did five people who were on board that rush hour train, people who were presumably heading home from work like they do every day. Probably many of them travel on this train every night. And this night, unfortunately, sitting in that first car meant that five of them died.
That's just a damn shame. So what about the NTSB feds? Are they on the scene?
They are. The team is growing here today. They'll be looking at a number of things. The signals at the crossing, which if you look at the video, appear to be working. Even after the crash happened, you could see that the flashing lights were still going off and that the gates were still down. They're going to be looking at the signals further down the track, further south on the track, to see if everything was working correctly. This train, if it was traveling at the maximum allowable rate for an express train on Metro North, would have been traveling at 60 miles per hour.
60?
60 is the maximum speed for many of the express trains on the Metro North line. And so that's possible, although it's very likely that the driver, the engineer of the train, we don't know this for sure. It's something the investigators will be looking at. May have tried to slow the train down, but as you know, a train that's eight cars long, moving at 60 miles per hour, it takes a very significant distance for that train to come to a stop. And obviously, the engineer did not have that time or the space to do that. But what's really distressing about this is the witness accounts from the driver who was in the car behind the woman in the SUV. He said that traffic was moving very slowly through the area, that it was backed up on the Bronx River Parkway, so that a lot of people got off the highway and onto the local streets in Valhalla. and they were moving very slowly, and then suddenly the gates started coming down at this crossing, and this woman behind the wheel of the SUV found herself on the wrong side of the gate. The gate came down on the rear portion of her SUV. This witness described her getting out of her car, going to the back of the vehicle, sort of jiggling the gate, looking at the damage, and all the while he's thinking, hey, we're running out of time here. Time is running short. You know, there's a train coming. And then to his surprise, she got back into the car, and instead of walking away from it, the car at this point was not on the tracks yet, he said. She actually stepped on the gas and moved forward right into the path of the oncoming train.
Steve Kestenbaum, chilling and excellent report. I appreciate it. Thank you very much. Okay, now to the aforementioned county executive in Westchester, the former GOP nominee or candidate for governor. Too bad he didn't make it, but we welcome our pal, Rob Astorino. Rob, it sounds like the driver of the SUV made a horrible error in judgment here, but it would seem to me that with all of what Steve Kestenbaum described, that traffic backing up, shouldn't there be some slowing down of a 60-mile-an-hour, express going through that kind of congestion?
Well, Geraldo, I live right near there, and when I was commuting up until the end of 2009, when I took office in 10, I just think of what it was like for those commuters who got on the 545, probably just called home or emailed saying, I'm on my way. And you get into that train, it stopped at 125th Street, and then it was an express, this particular train to Chappaqua. So really there was no reason to slow down on that straightaway there. It was 60 miles an hour, which is what they would do. If here's the sad part, if that train were not an express, it would have stopped at Valhalla. And once let off people, when continued, it would have been pretty slow. You know, that train from Valhalla Station to Lakeview Commerce over there where the accident happened was not that far. So it would have been going, 20 or 30 miles an hour. But unfortunately, it was going full speed to get up towards to Chappaqua. It was just a chaotic scene last night. The first responders did an amazing job. It was freezing outside. They were pouring water all over the place. It was ice forming quickly, snow all over the place. That smell is something that I always, unfortunately, have in my memory, and the sights of that train totally charred, just everything burned down. And that third rail that went up through the floor and straight through the first car, straight through, is an unbelievable sight. I'm amazed, Geraldo, that everybody was not killed. I mean, that was the scene. I don't know how, thank God, people were able to get out.
We heard some chilling survivors' accounts. What about Senator Blumenthal of Connecticut suggesting that because there have been other accidents at that site, this incident could have been prevented?
I don't know about that. I think there's a time for that kind of comment and discussion. Right now, they need the facts. The NTSB just landed in Westchester County Airport a little while ago, about an hour ago. They're on site doing their preliminary investigation. Last night and this morning, I've been in contact with the MTA chairman talking about, how we can help, because, they're the victims. I'm going to be going over to the medical examiner's office in a few minutes with the families who are over there. Of the six bodies, five were, burned beyond recognition, unfortunately. And, today is a day of coping for the families and dealing with
it. My God, when you said that, I just got the chills. Just thinking about those commuters, just regular folks, just going home after a hard day, almost home.
The world comes to a crashing end. And
why isn't there like a dead man switch when the track is not clear on the express that it just cuts off the electricity?
I don't know. I mean, that's I think, a good question. I was just more curious. We were looking it up, and in 2013, there were almost 2,100 collisions, according to the Federal Railroad Administration, on highway rail accidents.
Wow.
And there were 2,100
trains hitting cars.
Yeah, 251 fatalities and 929 injuries around the country. Now, you got to understand, the vast majority of the crossings don't have gates. They're in very rural areas,
right,
or whatever. This particular spot, and I know it very, very well, it's Lakeview Avenue. It cuts down through Gate of Heaven Cemetery, and there's the crossing there where the gate comes down, goes across the tracks, and then you either make a left, which would go northbound on the Taconic, or a right southbound on the Taconic into Valhalla and the Bronx River Parkway, or across, which is Commerce Street, which goes to Hawthorne. So it is a confusing area for traffic because people coming where she was coming to make a left across the parkway or straight, you have oncoming traffic, not sure whether to make a left. I take that every morning, so I know that spot very, very well. It is something I think state DOT needs to look at with regard to the Taconic, and obviously the MTA is looking at that particular site for the railroad tracks.
Well, it's too bad they're looking at it now and not the day before yesterday. It's just a tragedy. Rob, I appreciate Westchester County Executive Robert Astorino giving us an insider's account on this tragic, tragic accident. An SUV pulling onto the protected area, caught between the gates, and tragically going forward rather than in reverse, and causing, apparently, the investigators will tell us, a tragedy, the worst in Metro North history, and really, aside from the lives that have been snuffed out and just people so unexpectedly plucked from us. You have all of these others, the rail line itself, a mess. It'll take time to get that sorted out. We'll give you the info as we get it. Rob, again, thank you very much. We'll be back 19 minutes after 10 o'clock.
Under 77 WABC.
All of us want to make a difference. As veterans, we committed to protect our country. We served and sacrificed for the things that mattered most. Those experiences shaped our lives. Now we're husbands, wives, parents, and friends. And sometimes we forget that the biggest challenge can be asking for support. The Veterans Crisis Line is here for veterans. Dial 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. It matters.
Taxes won't be going down anytime soon. Ryan Payne of Payne Capital Management says if the tax laws are constantly evolving, then so should you.
One thing I've found is the tax laws are always changing, so whatever your investment plan is, be prepared to change often.
Listen to the Financial Safari with Ryan Payne Saturday morning at 7. You can also call him at 800-998-5649. The Financial Safari this Saturday morning at 7 on 77 WABC.
Does your basement or crawl space have a damp, musty smell? Well, watch out. That's a sign of too much moisture and not enough ventilation. And that can mean increased mold growth and the buildup of harmful toxins and gases. Don't bother with a dehumidifier. It just circulates the same unhealthy air. Get the Wave Ventilation Unit. It will transform your home into a drier, healthier environment. Satisfaction guaranteed. Go to dryhousetoday.com. That's dryhousetoday.com.
Geraldo, the truth behind the story for New York. Live, local, on it. 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
I was on a later train last night behind that accident. A shame the 7 people left for work that morning didn't get back.
You know, I know they say the train is the safest way to travel, and it is. But when you're on it every day, you know, you do worry sometimes, especially during the inclement weather.
All right, that's worried Metro North riders there. They were in the train behind the one that involved in the awful, awful, tragic crash, 6 dead. James in Long Island's on 866 Geraldo. What's up, James?
Good morning, Geraldo. Thank you for taking my call. You know, Geraldo, in this day and age of being politically correct with your words, your language, you have to say 5 innocent people lost their lives because of a moron. You really have to say that because even if there was heavy traffic, when you approach a train track, okay, if you can't safely get over it because there's a car just a little over the edge on the other side of it, you wait. You stop, you wait, because you never know when those things are coming down.
I agree, but it just seems to me if you got an express train going through our area that crowded, that either the train, the arm has to come down quicker. They've got to do, it just seems to me that it's too hair-raising. I mean, you ever stand by a train that's going 60 miles an hour? I mean, it just, your whole body
can
trembles.
Knock you over, yeah.
It is, it's just such it's a force, a huge, huge, filled with momentum and energy and, I don't know, man. Here's Joe in Brooklyn calling 866 Geraldo. What's up, Joe?
Hey, Rob, always good talking to you. It's so stupid to me that in this day that they can't, that the train company can't put some sort of electronic feature on there.
I agree.
That lets the train know that if it's not clear, the train starts coming to a halt.
And same in the subways. I'm with you, Joe. They got the Google now, these cars that can park themselves. It would seem to me that Google has the software that can read whether it's an animal on the track, whatever it is, to get abrupt stop, because that might injure people on the train, but a way to lock those wheels and sound the whistle and do all kinds of bells and whistles. It just seems so archaic, the system now, with an arm that comes down and the bells that ring. And
well, how it would be a huge undertaking to do that on the tracks. I mean, think about how many miles of tracks there are. So you're talking about
crossing.
Just a sensor at the crossing that would set off some alarm on the train.
I don't know what I'm talking about. All I know is that this seems to be too chancy. This leaves too much up to rookies. When you give this much authority to rookies, this woman was a rookie driver. I don't know how experienced she was, but I mean, she was a relative rookie. What she did was absolutely unforgivable. You know, it's a tragedy, but, you know, why did she go forward rather than back? Why did she get back in her vehicle to take her own life? I mean, she not only took the lives of the commuters, but her own life as well. I mean, if she didn't drive forward, didn't put that car on the tracks. One quickie here, Steve in Queens. What's up, Steve?
Steve, I used to work for Verizon up there, and I know that area a little bit. And I do blame the driver of the truck. If you can't get across, you don't go. And I don't blame the railroad, because 1,000 cars a day go over that thing without getting hit.
More than that,
one
probably.
Idiot parks in the middle without letting them know, without going across.
It's just, and when you get your driver's license, I mean, it would seem to me that would be like the first question they ask you in the damn test. Steve, thanks. Noam's got the rest of the news. Here you go.
Live, local, on it, 866 Geraldo, where New York comes to talk, 77 WABC.
Okay, welcome back, everybody. I want to do just another call or two on the tragedy with the Metro North. When is the briefing from the NTSB?
10:45, 15 minutes.
So what do we expect from that?
You know, these early initial ones, we don't find out a whole lot. They're there, and they're going to tell us what they're going to do in their investigation, but we really don't get the details till weeks later.
Did you, now that they have this reduced death toll, now 5 on the train and the driver 6, what about those wounded? Do you have any figure on that?
They're not giving us that. We have a figure. It's 15 in the hospital, but we don't know their conditions. We don't know if critical, what the scoop is.
Okay, this may be my last call on the train. What's up, Ken?
You know, I do love you, Geraldo, but you get a little bit, for a guy that probably should have been dead 25, 30 times around the world, you get a little hypervigilant. I remember two people jumped off the GW bridge last year after they killed their uncle or something. And we want to put up fences high enough.
I think they did put up some additional screening on the bridge.
I haven't seen it.
Anyway, what's the point? I'm overcautious. What's your other
simply,
point?
You can't legislate everything, people to do the right thing. There's a 10-80-10 rule. 10% do the right thing, 10% do the wrong thing. 80% in emergency situations do nothing at all. So that's going to be forever, and you're not going to save people from themselves some of the time.
Okay,
I
get you. I hear you, and I appreciate your original concept that you love me even if I'm hyper vigilant. I still think there's got to be some automatic cutoff switch, and in the future there will be. I am positive. With these bullet trains, I mean, my goodness, they're not going to trust your Aunt Tilly to drive across the train tracks when the train's going 200 miles an hour. All right, I want to switch to the vaccine debate now, because I got a very heartfelt letter from a man I was with. Ken, the caller, said I should have been dead 21 times. This guy kept me alive in Iraq and Afghanistan. He's a wonderful Army colonel, Dan Baggio. He said I could use his name. He's now a teacher he's from Wisconsin. He's a teacher in the Illinois area. And he wrote me this letter. He has 3 sons. The first two were born autistic here. I'll just read his note. Sorry to bother. On a somber note, I am disgusted with the unified effort to vilify Dr. Wakefield from the UK and his research concerning MMR. That's the combined vaccine shot that they give to kids. His research connecting MMR to autism. Last night, even Megyn Kelly, writes my friend Colonel Dan Baggio, joined the vitriolic attack, including dismissive remarks about Jenny McCarthy as a former Playboy bunny. Jenny McCarthy, of course, folks, you know, has led the charge in terms of blaming the vaccine for the outbreak, the epidemic of autism. Now the colonel picks up his note. In my mind, my little anecdotal experiment worked. After having two boys with autism 18 months apart, Gina and I, his wife, received strong hints suggesting abortion with regards to their third child, who is now my beautiful, perfect 7-year-old named Giovanni, who we gave no shots to until he was 5 and still no MMR. Now it is impossible to get the MMR, the mixed vaccine, in separate shots. Why is that? I've never been a conspiracy theorist, but this reeks of big drug companies and their hush money, perhaps the real villains. All right, he goes on, but the story in the Baggio family is the first two boys, and I know them well. They've been to my house in Edgewood, have stayed over. They are severely autistic. The third child, who received no MMR but did get some separate shots, is absolutely normal. To talk about this anecdotal, this distressing kind of story that you hear far too often, in my view, one of the most renowned experts in our country. We're delighted to welcome the head of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, Dr. Anthony Fauci, to the program. Doctor, what about this?
Well, I mean, first of all, it's so unfortunate that parents have to go through the difficulty when a child has an impairment. But if you look at the overwhelming data, it is anecdotal when you see an individual case like this. There have been a number of independent scientific bodies that have looked at the possibility of there being any relationship between measles vaccination and autism, and there just is none. And the early data that was presented that indicated that was the case has been shown again independently to be incorrect and, in fact, fraudulent. So the unfortunate circumstances that your friend went through is just a circumstance that was coincidence and not related to the vaccine, because science has shown that's the case. Terrible, unfortunate that parents who have children with autism, you know, have that unfortunate situation. But it's not the vaccine that's doing it.
All right, here's a little more from the note. A few cases of measles and the whole world is freaking out. What about the epidemic in autism? No way the jump from 1 in 10,000 diagnosed in the 1970s to the 1 in 99 now can all be attributed to better awareness.
Well, certainly there appears to be an increase in the incidence of autism. That doesn't necessarily at all. In fact, there's no reason to believe that that is connected with vaccinations, because studies have been done clearly, and they're not widely publicized, but they should be, that scientists have asked that very question and compared groups who were receiving measles vaccine versus those who did not, to see if there was any difference in the incidence of autism, and there was absolutely not. So the incidence of autism seems to be going up totally independent of measles vaccination. And as I mentioned, a number of studies have looked at that and showed that there's no connection whatsoever between measles vaccination and autism.
Dr. Anthony Fauci is my esteemed guest. He's the head of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. Dr. Fauci, how safe is my 9-year-old who has been vaccinated against the measles to this current epidemic?
If she was vaccinated with the standard recommended, I would assume that she received the vaccine between the ages of 12 months and 15 months.
Correct.
Once again, between 4 and 6 years. One of the things you can say is that the measles vaccination is one of the most highly effective vaccinations that we have against any virus or any microbe. So you can feel comfortable that since you had your daughter vaccinated, that she is really quite safe from the measles outbreak that we're talking about now in the United States.
Dr. Anthony Fauci, my guest, what about the combination of the vaccines into one cocktail? That many of my callers are concerned about that. They say, okay, any of these vaccines in and of themselves are fine, but when you mix them all up, it's just too much and it overwhelms their little systems.
Well, that's understandable that they may come to that conclusion, but let me give you some information that hopefully will clarify it for your callers and listeners. The amount of what we call antigen, which is a protein that is contained in the vaccine that induces the kind of response that you would like to be protective against the real infection, if you measure the amount of that in a cluster of vaccines, when you give two or three or four or more at a time, it is much, much, much less than your child or my child would get when they get a common respiratory infection. So if you get a cluster of vaccines, you get maybe a few hundred antigens. If you get the strep throat or one of the upper respiratory infections, you get thousands and thousands of exposure to antigen. So just the common infection in a child that all children get is much more of a burden of antigens than all of the vaccines that we get. So although you could understand that you may think a cluster of vaccines is overburdening the system, it's not, because the system has seen a much larger burden with the common infections that children get.
Dr. Anthony Fauci is my guest. What do you say to those governors of those states that still allow, for religious or other reasons, the parents to opt out of mandatory vaccination?
Well, again, I don't want to get into any of the politics of what governors do or do not do. I could only offer to the general public, including elected officials, that the data itself are the things that you should make your decision on, and the data are important. You have a highly infectious virus, measles. It can cause serious complications. The vaccines have been proven to be safe, and you have one of the most effective vaccines of any of the vaccines that we have against measles. You put all of that information together, and it just makes common sense that the thing to do is to get children vaccinated.
And when you hear, Dr. Anthony Fauci, when you hear various politicians, you heard Senator Rand Paul the other day, Senator Chris Christie, both have clarified their remarks when they suggest parental option or parental authority over this decision. What do you say to them?
Well, again, you must respect parents' need to and natural instinct to try and do the best for their children, but you want to make sure that the decisions that are made on sound scientific information and data and not on misinformation. So whenever I get asked about that, they say, well, you need to look at the facts, and all the facts overwhelmingly point to the overwhelming benefit of getting vaccinated with very little risk.
So would Dr. Anthony Fauci, if you had a 12-month-old today, allow that child to get the MMR?
Oh, absolutely. I have three daughters, all of whom have gotten MMR, and I have no concern at all about it.
And did we beat Ebola?
Well, in the United States, certainly, but we still have a problem, albeit getting somewhat better in West Africa. But it is not over until the last case in the West African countries is taken under control and there are no more spread.
Dr. Anthony Fauci, it's always a delight. I trust everything you say.
Thank you very much. It's always a pleasure to be with you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
The MMR, measles, mumps, rubella, you do wonder why they don't offer that separately. Why wouldn't they? You know what I mean? What's the big deal? Why not just if you don't want the cocktail, as long as you get them, you can space them apart? I don't know any scientific reason. I should have asked them for that. That's Dr. Anthony Fauci. I'll take your calls on measles and vaccines, but I've got to take this short break. 49 minutes after 10 o'clock.
Live and local, the Tri-State's most important issues with Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
5 minutes to 11 o'clock. Is this Sandy in Beacon? Hello?
Yeah, hey, Geraldo, how you doing?
How you doing? What's on your mind today?
Well, you know, it's about the whole measles epidemic all of a sudden.
Okay.
I know they're just trying to lay the blame of, you know, the spread of the measles on these wacky parents that don't want to have their kids vaccinated. But, you know, I remember about like maybe a couple hundred thousand immigrants from the Central America and Mexico coming across our border during the late spring, early summer. And I'm sure, like, none of those kids were vaccinated.
No, we didn't get information like that. What's that statistic we found for Mexico?
United Nations statistics said 90% rate of inoculation in South America.
In South America.
When it comes to measles.
So they're just as inoculated as American children.
Yeah.
It's just a way to people bring up the immigration issue. Come on. Stop it. It's always looking for an easy scapegoat. That whole line about immigrants bringing in diseases, don't you realize that's hundreds of years old? It's one of the oldest canards there is. And then they modified it so they were bringing in terrorism. It's baloney. Just deal with the issues that are at hand.
He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Welcome back, everybody. You know, I was just thinking, 6 minutes after 11 o'clock, you're listening to 77 WABC. It's Geraldo along with Noam Layden. You know, they have the big victory parade in Boston. They're lining the snowy streets of Boston now to welcome the triumphant Boston New England Patriots, led by Tom Brady. What's that? Okay, we'll get to that momentarily. But I was just thinking that Aaron Hernandez is on trial now for murder.
Yeah.
He must be so happy, his lawyers, with the timing. Because don't tell me that this won't have an effect on his credibility.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they love the Patriots, everything Patriot. And this is the perfect time for him to. And the evidence is a lot less certain than the press accounts at the time made out. You know, it is circumstantial. The biggest evidence they have, of course, is he appears to be holding a gun in that surveillance system in his home.
Right.
But nothing linking him specifically, as far as I know, DNA here and there. But I think this is a perfect time for Aaron Hernandez, and you might see a big upset there. I want to get back into the vaccine and your calls on the vaccine, but the NTSB hearing is happening right now, or statement on the dreadful train wreck. And I've been thinking about those commuters just heading home yesterday afternoon, and then all of a sudden, you know, to die in that horrible conflagration. Just awful. Let's listen in.
Track, highway factors, fire science, the mechanical
NTA
condition
spokesman
of the train itself.
Robert Sumwalt.
And in addition to that, we've brought in experts from the NTSB's Office of Transportation Disaster Assistance who will be here to provide support and assistance for those families who've been affected by this tragedy. We've got several busy days ahead of us. We intend to find out not only what happened, but we want to find out why it happened. And our sole purpose for being here is to find out what happened so that we can offer recommendations to hopefully keep this from happening again.
Okay, we'll monitor that. Here's Hale in Freeport. What's up, buddy? Long time no see.
Oh, I miss you guys. Anyway, I have a theory, and I hate to put it out with 50,000 watts. This measles epidemic, I think it's a secret person that works in the restaurant at the, what is that place called?
Disneyland?
Yes, I think it's a secret person doing this to sabotage us. And I've also said this in the past with the pilots and the airline stewardess that got sick on the plane. Those jerks work at minimum wage behind the counters, very easily could put something in the food, on the pizza, that's time released, and they get on a plane, or this disease that they put in the food to calm our children. That's my theory.
All right, well, a diabolical theory. I tend to discount it. I mean, I guess the only time I've seen it actually work was at the Japanese terror group. They released some bacteria in the subway, remember? They sprayed people.
Right.
It wasn't sarin gas. Sorry, it wasn't biological, sarin gas. Here's Sally, the well-known Forest Hills mom. Hi, Sally.
Hi there, Geraldo.
So what are you thinking? What's on your mind? I know you're an anti-vaccine campaigner.
Absolutely advocate, yes. But I just wanted to say on the CDC website, it says common components found in vaccines include aluminum, antibiotics, formaldehyde, MSG, and mercury. And you were just saying that in South America, the rate of autism is lower. I have to tell you why. They have in Cuba, for example, it's illegal to give Tylenol to children before or after a vaccine, and Tylenol diminishes your capacity to fight infection. Now, obviously, those components being injected into children are going to create infection. So if we eliminated Tylenol from children in this country, our rate of autism would be lower. However,
okay, Sally, you're not a doctor, Sally. You can't put out that kind of stuff, Sally, I understand your passion, but you can't give medical advice unless you're a doctor to the audience. I don't want people to confuse what you just heard from what you heard earlier from Dr. Fauci, the renowned head of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. When you hear from Fauci, there's science. When you hear from Sally, it's opinion. God bless her. But anyway, Mike. Hi, Mike. What's up?
Hey, good morning, all. I'm going to try and cover a lot in a short time here. But,
okay.
You know, take 500 kids and maybe 490 of them can eat a peanut butter sandwich, but there's probably 10 of them that will go into anaphylactic shock if they do.
Right. That's true. I mean, I don't know what the statistic is, but some number. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a percentage of people that are sensitive to certain things.
Right.
I feel that these vaccines are probably safe for the majority, but however, there are segments of people that are going to be sensitive to these ingredients, like your prior caller mentioned about mercury and aluminum.
I thought they took all mercury out years ago.
No, they've beaten that.
They certainly have said they have.
There's still traces there that are part of the preserving process. And, you know, I just think that, you know, you're talking about a neurological response that kids have. And, you know, this is serious. And yeah,
It's damn serious. Yeah. But you know what's even more serious is when lay people say as fact. See, I have a following now. All right. I've been on television 45 years, and some people just trust what I say. If I wanted to have a campaign against vaccines, I'm sure that there's some percentage of the people who follow me who would be, their opinions would be changed by my opinion about vaccines. That's why you have to be so careful if you have a position of where you have access to the public that is amplified by the echo chamber of the media, whether it's a 50,000 watt radio station like this powerful 77 WABC or Fox News channel in 144 different countries. You can't go there and start saying stuff about science. You're not a scientist. And it irks me. And that's why, I mean, my friend Colonel Dan Baggio wanted to stand up for Jenny McCarthy, but she was a former Playboy person. And her background, she has an autistic child, but that doesn't make her a scientist about autism. And God bless her for her passion. And the same with the wives of some of the on-air personalities right here at the station who are crusaders. You have to be very careful not to use that leverage to give out what is essentially your lay person's opinion. You have to rely on the science of it. It's just, it's one of those frustrating things to me to watch this phenomenon of how popular but unschooled people can lead movements that are ultimately destructive. In Hoboken, here's Mike calling 866-RALDO, 866-437-2536. What do you say, Mike?
Hi, Geraldo. So I called about the measles vaccine, but as you brought it up, I have to say, go Pats. I really wish I was in Boston for that parade.
Okay, man.
But anyway. So
I was rooting for the Pats, too. Weren't you? No? When push came to shove.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Go ahead, Mike.
Okay, so leaving aside the whole medical aspects of it, and let me for a second put it in perspective, play devil's advocate on both sides. Say the measles is as dangerous as they say and contagious as they say, and also say for the other side that the vaccines are as dangerous as they say. Let's think about it like this. I think empowering the government to forcibly inject anything into any of us is more of a threat than either the vaccine or the measles.
Why do you say that? Why do you attribute to the government some nefarious motive?
No, I'm not even saying there is any nefarious motive at all. My take is that giving them that power to forcibly inject anything, whether it be a vaccine or any type of power to forcibly medicate citizens, I think is extremely dangerous, much more dangerous than any disease.
I disagree. What's dangerous is you have a child who's between measles shot and booster shot. I'll make it up.
and he's in, she's in third grade or second grade or kindergarten, and your kid comes in and your kid's not vaccinated and your kid's exposed and is carrying the measles virus. That's the danger. The danger is the disease. It's not the cure. We eradicated measles in this country. Now we have to fight back to eradicate it one more time. And until we do that, unless and until we do, that's the danger. Here's Patricia. Hi, Patricia.
Hi, good morning, Geraldo. You know, I really don't have a position on whether the vaccines are harmful or not, but I want to just state that I'm a decade younger than you, so I'm, you know.
21?
I'm an older woman. But anyway, what I want to say was we all got our shots, and you never heard of this stuff when we
right.
were younger, right? But here's the difference that I see today. You have children. We have families where both parents are usually working. We've got kids in school at 6 months in nurseries and daycares. We have pre-Ks. You have kids that are 3 and 4 years old. So kids are getting shots, their shots of whatever kind, a lot younger than what we did. Because when we were in elementary school or kindergarten, we never heard of these, you know, autism and whatever. So, I mean, I'm not making the case but that it's connected, but I'm just saying that it seems to be more prevalent since children have entered school or a school-like environment at a much younger age than we did.
Well, certainly that last part is true, that kids are entering a school-age, communal-type environment a lot younger. In my day, kindergarten was half a day, and a lot of districts didn't even have kindergarten. You know, kindergarten is like an innovation. The way they have pre-K now is a big innovation. They just keep bringing the age back. Kindergarten was like introduction to school.
Right. Your first time ever in front of a
teacher.
Half
a day.
Yeah.
Half a day in my day. And then, and that was pretty revolutionary. And then kindergarten became mandatory, and then, you know, K through 12, and now pre-K, and now daycare. Kids are all going in two years old.
Oh, yeah. My 7-year old did 3 years of nursery school. I mean, that's kind of crazy now that I think about it. Full day nursery school.
She should get paid. 18 after 11. We'll be back.
New York's biggest issues right now. This is Geraldo, 77 WABC.
26 minutes after 11 o'clock. I want to button up this the vaccine debate. Obviously, we'll talk more about it as long as we have this active epidemic of measles spreading over 130 cases now, 14 different states. Interestingly, the states it's spreading are all states where parents have some option in terms of their religious or other beliefs to opt out of vaccines. I think there's an obvious cause and effect relationship. But thinking about autism, you just think about what has changed. I mean, from the days when they were 1 in 100,000 cases of autism, now 1 in 68, what changed? You think a lot of things have changed. I mean, it's not just about vaccines. You have like marijuana. Maybe it's marijuana. Maybe it's some of these pharmaceuticals that people are taking much more now than they did back in the 50s and 60s and 70s. What about the fact you have a lot more older parents now, particularly older dads? Maybe it's old sperm that causes autism. You know, there are variables that have changed that may be affecting the database in terms of the spread of autism, which is so distressing. And obviously on Celebrity Apprentice, that's the cause now we are working to raise funds for. We've gotten almost $600,000 in the bank already for Life's Work new center for the severely autistic. I give them a place to hang out during the day, learn some skills, be around in a very social environment, be protected if schools are closed, you know, have a safe place to come. It's a wonderful, wonderful facility. I'm just filled with pride that we're on that. But it is a scourge. Autism is really, it's such a challenge. And when you have a severely autistic, and the boys seem to be affected more than the girls.
Yeah, what is that? It's so interesting.
Who knows that either?
You know, the thing is, we don't know anything. We know so little about what causes it. I mean, some of it is reclassifying people who were once called retarded.
Right.
So the
mild retardation is kind of like what the analogous condition.
But that's only some of it. The rest of it is this explosion of kids with autism. And it's I had looked at the science because I have a nephew who's severely autistic, and there's so little on it. And I think that's part of the reason you get this with the inoculations. People want answers. They want to know what's causing it.
And the web is such a double-edged sword. I mean, you thirst for information. I remember when my father-in-law was dying of colon cancer. So he was on the web constantly. And so you go on the web, and obviously because, you know, it's everyone has access to it, there's so much there from sources that are so shaky, and they seize on, there's this study in Stockholm, there's this new treatment in Timbuktu, there's, if you stand outside and twirl around three times in the harsh sun, you might,
right.
You know, it's just this, and it's daunting, and it's unsettling, and it's upsetting, and it's not very helpful. And I'm just not sure that we know any more about autism now than we did when we first started recognizing this explosion of cases. But I don't think you can draw the parallel. And we have Dr. Anthony Fauci rejecting the connection statistically, with the burgeoning spread of autism, along with the fact that people are being vaccinated. It's just, there's no science to it. There's just hysteria, and it's not helpful. People who don't know better should shut up. I'm just trying to bring you the facts as we know. I'm not expressing an opinion other than my firm belief that if you don't get your child vaccinated, then you're guilty of child abuse.
The sound of the city, Geraldo, where New York comes to talk. 77 WABC.
38 minutes after 11 o'clock. Welcome back. I'm going to take Judy. We're going to do one more on the measles vaccine, then I want to move on. But here's Judy. Hi.
Hello. I'm not going to talk about the measles per se. I'm just going to talk in general.
You can talk about anything you want, honey.
No, I'm talking about as far as vaccinations go. You're very trusting, which is a really wonderful thing. But sometimes you have to a little bit more, question a little bit more, not take everything at face value. Let me tell you, Harold, let me ask you a question. There are two children. They're sitting at a table, same age, maybe they're 7 years old, and they both bite into, like that man said, a peanut butter sandwich. One child is perfectly fine. The other one, if you don't get him to a doctor within 20 minutes, he's gone. Why? What's the difference between these two?
I don't know. And Judy? I don't even remember peanut butter allergies when I was a kid. Everybody ate peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, and nobody had peanut butter allergies. Where'd that come from?
Geraldo, you know what? How do you know? Just because you don't know, and it doesn't mean it's not, it didn't happen. But I want to tell you something, Geraldo. Just that illustration alone shows you and tells you different immune systems, whatever the story is. And you know something? There are so many testimonials that you have not looked into. And yes, you should get Jenny McCarthy on and talk to her. She's an intelligent person, and she went through with her child. And a lot of these parents, a lot of people that go through health situation like Suzanne Somers, whatever, he pays to talk to them. They know certain things.
You know, I agree, but this is what I think, Judy. Let me just make this point. I mean, use the Jenny McCarthy if you want, or anyone else who has suffered, some tragedy. That makes them an expert in the emotional toll that the disease takes. That makes them an expert on their personal journey. And that's why I think people flock to those accounts, because they take comfort if they are similarly situated in the journey. But it doesn't make them an expert in the science. Jenny McCarthy is no more expert in this area than anyone listening to this program right now.
I'll bet you she's an expert in letting you know all the testimonials that are too coincidental, where children are perfectly fine, and the minute they get certain vaccinations, they become retarded. There's
got to
be a connection somewhere.
Well, I remember, thanks for calling, Drew. You're always so sweet and smart. Bob Wright, when he was the big CEO of NBC, and it was his grandchildren that were autistic, or one of them, as I recall, and I want to get this right. I don't want to, he's been very, very public about it. He funded the most amazing research into the premise, debunking the premise that the vaccines were related to the autism explosion. And he found no evidence at all. And as I recall the published accounts, it caused some estrangement between the grandfather and the parents, because the parents were keen and convinced, and Bob Wright scientifically did not find. I mean, he commissioned everything. He wanted, with all his vigor and intelligence and resources, to find the connection, and found none. And on the other hand, we hear from, what's his name, Wakeman or Wakefield?
I think it's Wakefield, yeah.
Wakefield, who will get on the program. I think it's fair to get him on the program. His original research, his numbers were fabricated, there was fraud involved.
Well, not only that, he was discredited, but they took away he's trying to get it back, and he may well, but they took away his medical license in London. Okay. Yeah.
So I don't want to talk anymore about vaccines today. I mean, obviously, this is a story that'll be around as long as the measles is around, but I have to talk about it. You saw in the New York Post, I think the Post was really the only newspaper to run the picture of the Jordanian pilot in flames. And then they took it down, the Post did, my colleagues at the New York Post, and replaced it with the Metro North crash. Obviously, more relevant, at least immediately, to New Yorkers, the terrible transit accident here than the act of terrorism over there. But I want to talk about that act of terrorism, because I think it says something about President Obama and his position that might make sense to you. So ISIS burned the pilot to death. They tortured him first. They beat him up. Then they burned it. And then they distributed this disgusting videotape to the world. And the reason I'm bringing it up now, and I want to mention it before we go off the air today, is that my sense is that the ISIS animals may have sowed the seeds of their own destruction. Now, hear me out. If they wanted to goad us in the West, the civilized world, the modern, industrialized world, we have already been stuck and we are sticking back. I mean, they got us already when they cut the heads off the journalists and other acts. I think Kobani, the Syrian city of Kobani, was the classic example of, all right, you cut off our people's heads, you tried with all your might to take the city, and we pounded you into the dirt. We beat you. Kobani, the city, was saved. So the West knows. We have stopped, I think it's fair to say, excuse me a second. It's fair factually to say that we have stopped the advance of ISIS in Syria and in Iraq. By all accounts, you have the Iraqi army now getting its act together finally. I wonder what those sirens out there are for. My old reporter's instinct, you want to chase the ambulances, find out what that is. But the Iraqi army is getting its act together. They're recapturing territory. They're on the march to recapture the important city of Mosul, the second largest city in Iraq, which has been under ISIS control since the summer. The real news of the atrocity concerning the burning of the Jordanian pilot is that finally it may have moved the Sunni Muslims in the region to regard ISIS as the savages, as the brutes they are, even to their fellow Sunni Muslims. This is huge. This morning, for instance, in Jordan, we have the King Abdullah, a great guy by all accounts. He's kept that country, that fragile country, together largely with American support. But today, his country executed two al-Qaeda prisoners that they had. Whatever you think about whether or not that was in keeping with the legal system of Jordan or not, and whether they followed their own rules or not, the point is that nation saw the need to revenge itself against ISIS for ISIS killing its pilot in that despicable way that they killed him. What we really need to see now is widespread condemnation of ISIS by Sunni Muslims. We need to see Sunni Muslim outrage on the streets of Sunni Muslim countries against ISIS extremists. We need to see Sunni Muslim outrage that's as big and as passionate and as angry as the Sunni Muslim demonstrations against the cartoons about Prophet Muhammad. Remember those big demonstrations they had, plus Cairo and Benghazi and Islamabad, everywhere they were rioting about the cartoon. I want to see that kind of rage against the burning of that pilot. And it may be that ghastly execution by fire of the Sunni Muslim Jordanian pilot by ISIS, those pigs, will wake up that community to the fact that ISIS is not about religion. Their religion is apocalyptic nihilism. They want to break civilization. They want to scavenge off the pieces. But note this, and this is where President Obama is blind to reality. You've seen one of the grossest atrocities ever, and you haven't seen anything near the scale of anger and outrage about that atrocity as you did about the cartoon of some of these other things. When the Sunni Muslim community starts demonstrating its revulsion over extremism, then you'll know you have allies in that community. Unless and until they do, then you know what I say? Bull walks, data talks. 47 after, we'll be back.
From New York, for New York, live, local, on it, Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Okay, welcome back, everybody. I want to get to some of your calls, if I can, before we run out of time.
You know, before you do, you know how many hits you've had on Geraldo.com over this whole Kenya stealing Vivica Fox's phone on The Apprentice?
Allegedly.
Unbelievable. Well, you can say allegedly, but I believe for sure it was so.
Me too.
I mean, there's tons of comments. People want to weigh in on it. It's really amazing.
So if you do, okay, great. So folks, Geraldo.com, if you want to weigh in, it was, I think, PhoneGate. I think they're calling it PhoneGate. It made reality show history, a new low. Kenya Moore apparently stealing her rival Vivica A. Fox's telephone so she could hack her Twitter account and put fake tweets on it about, damn, I'm crazy, hot flashes, menopause, that's why I'm doing so bad on the show, I'm sweating. Just it's amazing, amazing things.
Did we hear any more from her? Will she take that lie detector test?
I have not heard from Kenya. I hear from Vivica a lot. Vivica is getting a lot of loving. I mean, a lot of women, white, black, brown, they are rallying to Vivica as a strong role model, as a person to admire, as a person who plays tough but fair and by the rules, unlike Kenya, who is celebrating the ratings. Now, the ratings were the highest in years for Celebrity Apprentice. It really was a stunning hit. It has been all season, but particularly on Monday. And so, so Kenya's taking credit to say, see, I'm the showman. I'm the one they come to watch. And Real Housewives of Atlanta is the highest rated of all the Housewives.
Oh, it is.
Show.
Mm.
So anyway. So I feel obscene going back to a question about Jordanians and executions and.
Oh, how are you feeling? If we're talking about The Apprentice, you're down to three. How are you feeling? Are you feeling you're like, you can pull this thing out? You only have two competitors now.
I have two competitors and they're both female, so it could be the female split the vote, and I get to be a finalist. But, you know, we don't know. Vivica's a very formidable participant, contestant. And Lisa Gibbons is, the smartest of the bunch. Very, very slick, very competent, very articulate.
You know what? She has not been in the boardroom yet. If I'm not mistaken, she has not been in the boardroom in front of the Donald yet, has she?
I think you're absolutely right. She's
so you better watch out.
I know. Well, stay tuned. It's going to go down to the wire, and you'll get the latest and the first news of it right here. See you tomorrow.